And sad to say, the Trinity Sunday egg hunt has been canceled due to lack of interest. So this very dignified panel of speakers was talking about such things, and I raised my hand. I wanted to ask a question about a sermon prop. It was one that I had seen used in my own home parish. It was a can of 3-in-1 oil. I asked my question, can one use a can of 3-in-1 oil on Trinity Sunday? Upon which the dean himself slowly, solemnly unfolded his great stature and pointed to heaven and said, whatever else you do in your preaching career, do not hold up a can of 3-in-1 oil on Trinity Sunday. And then he sat down. The theological implications of which were totally lost on me because I was so mortified that I had been the cause of bringing the dean to his feet. Therefore, I am pleased to report to you today there will be no can of 3-in-1 oil. Although its qualities include cleaning, lubricating, and protecting. Now, I think that'll preach. Our God cleans, lubricates, protects, but we're not going to go there. There will be no sermon prop of any kind, with all due apology to St. Patrick of Ireland, who famously used the shamrock to illustrate the Christian doctrine of the Trinity. We sang that song in his honor today. Instead of props and clever sermon illustrations, for greater appreciation of the Trinity, we really need only one thing, and that's our imaginations. Frankly, I believe the imagination is terribly underused in our spiritual lives. We tend to focus on rules, on rigidity, on getting it right. We fuss about moral measurements and whether we're up to snuff, and quite frankly, we tend to spend a lot of time judging on whether other folks are up to snuff. In whatever part of our lives where we are fully competent and in control, in charge, God is not welcome. You know, when I do something well, I don't need God. We don't need something outside ourselves when we're doing just fine on our own. But when we can move our spiritual life and practices away from what is well-trod, well-practiced, maybe even a little threadbare, we meet God again for the first time. For most of us, this is in the territory of the imagination. We just don't go there enough with the divine life. And imaginative it is that we Christians believe in the Trinity, a doctrine that took about 300 years to hammer out. It says that there is one Father, not three, one Son, not three, one Spirit, not three. And further, that the Son is not the Father or the Spirit, the Father is not the Son or the Spirit is not the other two, which is worthy of a contortionist. But let's cut our religious forebears some slack. They were desperately trying to defend historic monotheism while asserting the divinity of Christ, and establishing a place for God's Spirit. That is not an easy task. If it were, it wouldn't have taken 300 years. How much easier it would have been to go down the path of polytheism. I know of one fictional Hindu from The Life of Pi, It's an excellent novel and film. He laments, "Those poor Christians, they only have three gods." He knows the quote. "No, my brother Hindu, we have one God. But look at all the ways that God is made manifest, not just to us, but to all that God has created. There is God out there. That's called transcendence. A God so completely beyond as to dwell in purity, perfection, and eternal joy. There is God right here. That's called immanence. God so completely close as to be present in the very fabric of life. God woven in to the web of life. And there is God within. That's called the indwelt life. God at the innermost center of our being, closer than our very breath. God is in all three places, all the time, without division, in perfect unity. This is a mystery. Quite honestly, we do not like mystery. We don't like mystery, but that's okay. That seems to be a quality that's inbuilt into us humans. And Christian theologian Ilya Delio extols the fact that we don't like mystery, because she says we always want more. We want to know more, to understand more. And that this is a dynamic of life present in every level of life, even the cellular level. We interact with our environment. We want to incorporate it and then transcend it. Include and transcend. It is one of the driving factors of life. Fueled by mystery, we keep trying to know more, to learn more, to lean into. What she says is that what we want more of is being itself. We are always becoming. This isn't consumerism. We don't necessarily want to buy another big screen TV. Materialism is well-being, but spirituality is more being. And that's what mystery fosters. Spirituality. We don't like mystery, but the value of having it is in where it leads us. It leads us into unfamiliarity, uncomfortable territory, where we cannot rely on rules and rigidity. They just don't work. We must grapple with mystery. This is sort of the fundamental energy of life. We grapple, we struggle, we explore. The Trinity is mystery. It is something we cannot really understand, but it's something we can experience. When we experience Trinity, we are in the world of imagination, a place that is wholly, completely spiritual. The Trinity is a fuller revelation of God as both mystery and paradox, an awareness of how much more God is than we can ever comprehend, especially with our religious minds. It took a long boat trip for one bishop to learn this. He set sail around the world with a small company of fellow travelers. Soon they came upon an island thought to be deserted, but the bishop spied smoke coming from the island, and he knew it was inhabited. He said to himself, "I must go there and give them the gospel." So he set out in a dinghy, and on the island he encountered the oddest thing. Three people who did everything together, always facing each other, always smiling, arm in arm. Together they drew water, made their campfires, prepared their food. They warmly welcomed the bishop, who asked whether they knew how to pray. Pray? We've never heard of such a thing. But they were eager to learn. Unfortunately, they weren't the sharpest knives in the drawer. The bishop began, "Our Father." They repeated, "Our Father, who art in heaven? Who art in heaven?" Okay, put it together. Put what together? "Our Father, who art in heaven." Well, it went on like this for hours. The bishop could get them to remember a few lines, and then they'd forget. But he stayed with it. Over and over they went, working on the great prayer of Christianity, until finally, success. They mastered the Lord's Prayer. As the sun was setting, the bishop said his goodbyes amid protests from his friends who did not want him to depart. They embraced him warmly, bowed deeply, and then he was gone. He rowed back to the ship, which soon set sail. Days later, and far out to sea, there was a commotion on deck among the passengers. At the stern of the ship, they saw a faint, fuzzy image. And as they watched, it grew larger and larger and was approaching the ship. It eventually caught up with them. It was three people, arms linked together, running on the water. They approached the side of the ship and called for the bishop and said, "Holy Father, we have forgotten our prayer. Teach us again." The bishop looked down on them, bobbing on the top of the water, still smiling, still looking at each other, still holding each other, and said, "Go in peace to love and serve the Lord."